Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
This is the Civilized Barking Podcast with Zach Jackson.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming to Civilized Barking. I'm Zach Jackson, talking Browns and Texans. If you're new here, welcome. If you're not, we appreciate you. It's been a different Browns season. It's been a mostly positive Browns season. It now feels to me like they haven't played in 4 weeks. Maybe it feels like that to you. I don't know. A lot's going on in the world. Even on the Browns bye week, you know, it was all quiet. Baker Mayfield went on the COVID list. He's back. We fully anticipate Nick Chubb and Wyatt Teller back. We'll see how the pitch count or whatever it is goes with Chubb. But the Browns come to the second half of the season for the first time since 2014, having a chance to make the playoffs. The Browns come to the second season, you know, providing some hope and some growth. If you've listened, if you've read, I am more optimistic about their long-term future than the rest of this year, specifically because of the defense, but we'll see. Anyway, thank you. Download, share, subscribe, review, all of that stuff. Subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't. We got a football game to talk about. My colleague in Houston is Aaron Reese. He's covered the Texans for a few years, so he's seen some good. He's now seeing some bad. Aaron, the game is not till Sunday at 1, but both teams have already given up a 50-yard touchdown pass. How did that happen?
Well, the Texans' top corner is Vernon Hargraves, or one of them, so that's how it happened. These defenses are pretty not great, and so I think it'll be really fun. It'll probably be an entertaining game. I'm not sure who's going to win, but I expect a lot of points.
Yeah, so one thing I do when I'm starting to write some stuff is, like, if I see a stat, I'll log it. Like, I'll screenshot it or I'll email it to myself, but I try not to go back to it until I've kind of written, you know, to give some context, right? Unless it's just an outrageous or outlandish stat. So I saw some of the Texans defensive numbers the other day and I screenshotted them, but I didn't go back to the exact numbers before we started doing this. I'm going to let you do that. But the one that really jumps out to me that I can't get out of my mind is they didn't have an interception till October 18th. And last week they got their second of the season. And, you know, that's kind of been Baker's Achilles heel. We know the numbers are bad across the board. So just how bad are they? Is that the worst one, I guess, is what I'm asking you.
It's definitely one of, I mean, cause you know, the team, they were playing Jake Luton or Lawton, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, the Jaguars rookie backup quarterback. It was his first start and he put up, you know, over 300 yards on them. But they kind of let him off easy because he threw, I would say, four potential picks. One of them was actually picked off by Vernon Hargraves, but there was also a potential pick six that Zach Cunningham tipped a pass on a blitz, and then Tyrell Adams, another linebacker, dropped. And then Philip Gaines, who was starting and normally comes on the bench, but was starting because Bradley Roby didn't make the trip for disciplinary reasons, he dropped two picks. I mean, at the end of the day, this defense is just it just does not have a lot of talent, especially in the secondary. Secondary cornerback is just a really weak spot for them. With Roby out, I looked this up during the game. They were playing Hargraves, Gaines, and Keon Crossan, who's more of a special teams guy, but those were their top three corners. And I think those three guys collectively accounted for like 1.4% of the cap this year. So this is just not – this team is paying more money to running backs than cornerbacks. So it's just a pretty weak spot for them. And so I think Baker Mayfield could be in for a big day.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Browns attack because they get everybody back for one. They have the extra bye week, which means the self-scout, throw out the bad plays, focus on the good ones, right? And the Browns are a run-first team. That doesn't mean they're an only run team, but the run game sets up everything else. You know, what is the vibe from the Texans in terms of Chubb, in terms of Kareem Hunt? You know, we know Odell's not going to be there, but Jarvis should be healthy. Austin Hooper's a good player. You know, is there one thing they're going to try or need to take away to have a chance, or are both teams just kind of going to see who can get to 38 first?
I think the Texans, you talked to Romeo Crennel about the play action attack of the Browns and all that, and just kind of the way their offense is set up. And what he has said over and over, what JJ Watt has said too, is like the focus has to be kind of on keying in on the run, stopping the run, and then everything will kind of flow from there. But I don't really think that is realistic. I mean, this team ranks 28th in run defense DVOA, 23rd against the pass. So they've been slightly worse against the run, not really good in either. They've given up over 200 yards to Derrick Henry. Dalvin Cook killed him, and the Vikings killed him with play action. You know, Lamar Jackson killed him. I mean, they just have gotten crushed on the ground over and over and over again. And, you know, part of the problem was that Zach Cunningham, their high-paid middle linebacker, he was uncharacteristically bad for the first 5 or so weeks. And that kind of turned around in recent weeks. He hasn't been missing as many tackles. But I still think that just in general, this defense is pretty weak and especially bad against the run. And I think that's why it's a really terrible matchup defensively for the Texans. So their only hope is, you know, Deshaun Watson kind of bailing them out, which I think is possible, but or Baker Mayfield bailing them out with a mistake or two.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I think the Browns' goal will be to mostly take it out of Baker's hands. I think they'll get him some quick ones early to kind of test some things. I think without Odell, they'll have to script the deeper routes, you know, more than get them in the flow of the game. But I look for at least one early to try to do that. You know, I think most of our Cleveland listeners aren't super familiar with the personnel outside of Watt and of Cunningham and of Bradley Roby, right? And he wasn't there last week. So I do know from reading you, from following them in my own game prep, they have made some personnel changes. Was that, you know, necessitated by absences, or, you know, has Romeo and the staff done some things over the next couple of weeks that you'll notice that the defense being even a little bit better?
You know, I don't know if they'll really be better. They have made some changes. It's been more by necessity. They lost the number three safety, AJ Moore, and then that caused them to lead to sliding Lonnie Johnson, a 2019 second round pick, to safety. He had been pretty penalty prone as a corner. And so he's not as penalty prone, but he's made some big mistakes. I would say there's at least two coverage busts that been his fault that led to touchdowns since he's moved to safety. So he's been a struggle at safety, and they've been moving Justin Reed, their better safety, down into the box to help against the run, and that might have helped a little bit. But I think that in turn has made them more vulnerable to deep passes, to shots. That, you know, that was one thing they actually did do well in defense last year. There wasn't a lot they did well, but that was one of the few things, was limiting those big plays. And so now they're starting to give up some of those chunk plays. You know, they're gonna get Whitney Mercilus back. He was out because he was a close contact and COVID testing. And so that'll help a little bit, but he's kind of been underwhelming this year. They're going to be without Jacob Martin, their other kind of like sub pass rusher, and he, because he was COVID positive. And so that'll be a bit of a loss. But yeah, I mean, overall, this defense is just, you know, they're somewhat limited. And you just look at how they kind of spent their money, it's not really that much of a surprise. This team was built to win shootouts, and so that's kind of the only way they can win games. But what surprised me in the first half of the season, I guess, is that I thought maybe the defense could be the 20th worst defense in the league or something like that. But, you know, they're probably like a bottom three, bottom four unit. And the running game, if it was even like league average, I think that would be okay. That'd be good enough for Deshaun, but it's the worst rushing offense in the league. So you combine those things, and the margin of error for Watson just becomes really small. And that's why at the end of the day, they're 2-6.
Right. All right, let's get into some more fun stuff here, Aaron, because these teams are not rivals. They've played through the years and not really significant games, because it's been so long since the Browns have been good. And a couple of times when the Browns were better, the Texans were in their infancy or were struggling. But there are some pretty deep connections here, several of them. So let's roll through them, and let's start with Romeo Crennel, one of the nicest men in football. One hell of a football coach and a defensive coach, and an amazing career of different organizations, different levels of success, keeps trying to retire, keeps getting pulled back. A guy who makes the organization he's working for better, but not a guy you want as your head coach. And we know he wasn't designed to be the head coach. You know, what are your impressions of Romeo? What has he been able to do differently, either for good or bad, in his month plus on the job?
Yeah, I would say first, from a reporter perspective, it sure is nice to talk to him 3 times a week or 4 times a week, whatever it is, versus talking to Bill O'Brien 4 times a week. I mean, he's honest about injuries. You know, he gives insightful answers. You know, he's just kind of fun to talk to, like you mentioned. And I think some of those sort of qualities, they bleed through to the team, and that is kind of been important for this team. It's, you know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, this team is probably not going to make the playoffs. It would take a sort of miracle run for them to make the playoffs. They're very disappointing. They don't have first or second round picks. So, you know, I mean, they're kind of in this sort of no man's land. And I think it's important, especially in comparison to a personality like Bill O'Brien, who I think really wears on people when it's not producing good results, to have a guy like Romeo who can kind of lighten the mood. And you know, all the players, you know, basically said as much after he came over. And so I think that's kind of been his charge here during the season, is like, can he keep these guys engaged and not, you know, turning on each other and stuff like that. And, you know, I think he's done an okay job of that. And, you know, I also think that they're going to probably start winning some more games here in the back half of the season. Schedule just gets a lot lighter. You know, they obviously started with a really brutal start against the Steelers, Ravens, and Chiefs that I think looks even harder now in the context of how good the Steelers are this year. I think that's been the thing with him, and he's done a good job of it. And what I've been impressed by with him, Romeo, the most is like, for how old he is, I mean, he's the oldest guy to ever be a head coach in an NFL game. He's been made some kind of modern, more aggressive decisions. You know, he went on fourth down in his first game as interim coach to put the Jags away. And then he obviously went for two against the Titans in a decision that was kind of criticized or debated, but I liked it. You know, I'd rather Deshaun Watson get me 2 yards to win the game than trust this defense. So I've been impressed by kind of some of his approaches. It has not been maybe as old school as I thought it would be. And obviously, like I said, he's been fun to cover.
Yeah. I mean, he worked for the Browns twice, but everyone remembers his 4 years as head coach. His famous in his last year, when everything started going off the rails one day, Dante Stallworth took a spike to the foot from Braylon Edwards. Or maybe it was the other way around. But anyway, one of them was running around barefoot after practice and got spiked by his position mate and missed some time. And when Romeo was asked about it, he said, kids will be kids. They run around with their shoes off all the time. And I just, that was 12 years ago, and I say it every week in some form or fashion. Kids will be kids. Deshaun Watson is a talented kid. A really gifted kid. He deserves better. And frankly, as I look at the Texans organizationally, not just in light of yesterday's news, but over the past year, what they let Bill O'Brien do and then pulled the plug on him and all of that. I mean, really the difference in the Browns' level of incompetence for the last 11 or so years is only that they have their quarterback, right? The Browns decided to give Deshaun Watson to the Texans in the 2017 draft. What are they going to do? Going forward, you mentioned the lack of picks. You know, tell me about Deshaun's growth and tell me your early read on who might be his next coach and what they can do to get better around him.
Yeah, you know, I actually I'm writing something about this for The Athletic that'll post later this week about how Watson is kind of redefining how good a bad team's quarterback can be. I've been doing a lot of research on this and kind of by any metric you want to look at. I mean, he basically is outpacing the best passing performances of any team that won like less than five games. And that maybe that is indicative that this team is better than a 5-win team and that they ultimately will, you know, finish more like 7-9 or something like that. But, in terms of growth, the big thing has been in working on the story and talking to people is about how he just is, he's running less than he had in the past. Although he did scramble 10 times to lead the team in rushing last week against the Jags. In general, he has been running less, and it's not so much, I think, a function of them not wanting to run him or trying to protect him. I think it is this, that he is more confident and willing to stand in the pocket, make his reads and make a throw. And he's been really, really accurate this year. And he is, he doesn't seem to really be missing DeAndre Hopkins, at least not in the sort of aggregate. I think it's maybe there's a few plays a game where he's behind the sticks because David Johnson got stuffed on first down. And now it's 3rd and 9 and he's got to make a play or this drive ends and they probably lose the game. And that is, I think, where you really miss a guy like Hopkins being able to kind of throw it to him if he's not open. But in general, the passing offense is more efficient than it ever was with DeAndre Hopkins. And so I think that's been very interesting to watch in terms of kind of where they go from here around him. I mean, for one thing is I wonder if they keep this receiving core together, given all I just said. You know, Brandon Cooks, he has 3 more years left on his deal, but it's no more guaranteed money. And they probably need to bring his cap hit down because the salary cap is going down. And also if they want to keep Will Fuller, who is having the best year of his career, highest target share of his career, has stayed healthy, which has obviously been an issue for him. And so if he keeps playing like this, he's going to get a pretty sizable deal in free agency. It could be tough for them to hold on to him, but at the same time, with the sort of results they're putting up as a passing game, I don't know if you want to get rid of him. Watson was asked about Fuller potentially getting traded to the Packers after the after week 9, and he said it would have been hell if they had traded him. So I think right. He's made very clear he wants to hold on to Fuller. So the biggest thing is kind of what do they do around him? You know, they got to make probably at least one change on the offensive line at right guard. Zach Fulton has really struggled there. He's definitely the offensive lineman to watch in this game in terms of how the Browns can punish him. And then David Johnson, you know, it's been a totally failed experiment at running back. They're going to have to get a new running back. But those are kind of the only changes I see on offense necessary. The bigger thing is just, can you improve the defense? And how do you do that? And is J.J. Watt a part of it? All indications are Watt is not. He's been pretty noncommittal when people ask him about his future here. He said he wants to win a Super Bowl. He's not interested in a rebuild. So that doesn't seem like something they're not going to be a Super Bowl contender next year, I don't think. And so they're going to have a lot of pieces to kind of need to be moving around on defense. They have a lot of holes on defense. And I don't really see a way that they can fix it all with picks. They're going to have a lot of contracts they can kind of move around or cut or whatever to create space and make some stuff happen in free agency.
Is it going to be Eric Bieniemy?
You know, I think that would be a really interesting choice. And I've heard that he's certainly on the list. But I think that they're going to have a really, really wide search. That's been all indications. And I don't know if they're necessarily going to view it like they have to necessarily place an offensive mind over the control of the search. You know, what's interesting about it is Jack Easterby, who's the interim GM. He was the VP of football ops or executive VP of football ops. That's the title he'll revert back to when they hire a GM. He has a lot of influence on this team, and he was Bill Bryan's right-hand man during all this sort of stuff. And, you know, the way they would spin it now is that he was ultimately deferring to O'Brien, and, you know, O'Brien is a kind of cult of personality, and you had to follow what he said. And you know, there probably is some truth to that, but at the end of the day, it's like, it does make you wonder, like, if this guy kind of had these sort of value structures in place to believe in, you know, valuing David Johnson the way they did, to value sort of the positions they did, who's to know that they're going to, you know, think kind of the conventional thinking that you got to hire an offensive head coach who's going to stick with Watson and, you know, kind of make him flourish. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the sort of values they're going to put in place. So Easterby is a big, big culture guy. And one of the knocks on Bieniemy, right or wrong, you know, I'm not in the room, is that he doesn't interview well or whatever. And so if he's not a convincing personality, I don't know if that's the sort of guy who gets this job.
Yeah. I mean, I know that has nothing to do with Sunday, but I mean, I cover a coaching search every year, so I just, I know how this stuff goes. All right. So David Johnson has been a bust, which everybody could see coming. He's just not the same player anymore. So Duke Johnson gets the call up, and I have long been a fan of Duke Johnson. Now, he was never an A1 running back in this league, right? He's not a great between the tackles runner. He's not big enough to be, but he has a unique skill set. He has a certain skill set, multiple skills, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I would imagine, given the circumstances, that he will be pumped up for this game. Now, guys, let's be honest. You know, there was some stuff that swirled around his trade. And, of course, he wanted out when the Browns went to Kareem Hunt. Baker made a comment, just a comment, that maybe he should have said something. The big thing is the Browns extended Duke Johnson before they traded him. And they knew, and Duke knew he was going to get cut unless he got traded. So along comes Bill O'Brien, the worst GM. Well, I don't know, not worse than Ray Farmer, but one of the worst GMs there ever was, and gives a third round pick for a backup running back in Duke Johnson. Have you guys heard from Duke this week? I know it's so hard without actually being able to be in the locker room, but you expect a motivated Duke Johnson. And do you agree with my assessment that the Texans just haven't used the guy?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, we have not talked to him this week. We last talked to him after the game on Sunday because he got a career high 20 touches because David Johnson was out. And so I think we're going to get to see kind of more heavy workload for him again this week. With David Johnson didn't practice on Wednesday with a concussion, and you know, that would seem to be trending towards him not playing on Sunday. I totally agree with the assessment. They didn't use him. I think if you're going to trade a third round pick for him, the price is a little rich, but you know, you can at least get something out of him. This guy, I mean, he averaged 6.5 yards per touch last season, which was third among all running backs with at least 100 touches. So, I mean, he's very effective when he gets the ball, but he has, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's his size or I don't know what, but no team has wanted to give him the ball as much as it seems like he should be getting it. And, you know, he obviously, his 20 touches this past week kind of inflated the number, but if you look through the first seven games, I think he was averaging 5.6 touches per game, which was the second lowest number of his career. And it matched only his total from, or it was only outpaced his average from the last season with the Browns. So, I mean, they're just not getting the sort of production you should be getting out of a guy you traded a third round pick for. And the trade looks pretty bad, but I do think at least he will probably stick around one more year. He has one more year under contract. There's no more guaranteed money on the deal. So, you know, given kind of the cap going down and how the drive for agency will be for running backs, I imagine he probably will be able to be a guy they restructure. And David Johnson will be gone. So maybe he finally gets a little bit of a heavier workload. But yeah, I mean, that was another criticism of the David Johnson deal was like, you already have a guy on this team who can catch passes out of the backfield. You
right.
Take you have a third round pick for him. Why are you trading DeAndre Hopkins for another one? You know, so yeah, I mean, I think he's an effective player, not an effective enough player to get a third round pick for, and certainly not an effective enough player to give a third round pick for if you're giving him 5.6 touches per game.
Right. All right. So, the Browns had all 53 guys in practice on Wednesday, and Nick Chubb is 54. He will be activated by the end of the week, barring a setback. There's no reason to think he will have that. That's the other Browns-Texans trade connection with the pick acquired and the Brock Osweiler trade, which was a brilliant trade. The Browns just fumbled the execution by not knowing if they wanted to keep Osweiler or not. They got Nick Chubb. He's become one of the best football players in the NFL, and he's coming back on Sunday. Aaron, I look for this. I look for the Browns to establish Chubb to throw off of some play action stuff. Austin Hooper is going to be heavily involved. I've tried to tell you fantasy nerds that they're going to get him his touches. And I still think Kareem Hunt, you know, will play a role. So other than just letting Deshaun create, which I know that he does, and 8.8 yards per attempt, you know, that speaks to a quarterback who plays for a bad defense, right? But that yeah. speaks to a talented quarterback. Other than just letting him create, you know, what do we expect to see in a game that we both expect you have to score at least 30 to win?
Yeah, I think one thing I'll be watching is kind of where Myles Garrett lines up. You know, I know he kind of is a guy who moves to both sides, but I wonder, you know, do you have a matchup against Laremy Tunsil and kind of let Laremy Tunsil and him play that one-on-one game and hope Laremy Tunsil neutralizes him if you're the Texans? Or do you, as the Browns, kind of say, we can, you know, line Garrett on the right side. He can probably feast a little bit on that right side of the line. Like I mentioned, the right guard, Zach Fulton, is probably their most vulnerable lineman. And, you know, can you get a lot of consistent pressure on Watson that way? Because I think that's what you're going to need to do with how well he's been passing the ball. Beyond that, you know, I think another guy to keep an eye on is another guy who played for the Browns, Darren Fells. And he has, you know, he wasn't much of a receiver when he played for Cleveland, but since he's come to Houston last year and then again this year, he's been like more productive as a receiver than he had been anywhere else in his career, even though he's 34. And he's been quite the red zone threat for them these past two seasons. And the other guy to watch on offense, I would say, is Will Fuller. Like I mentioned, he is someone they, you know, was kind of caught in a bunch of trade deadline rumors, and he's having the best season of his career. And I think he could be in line for a big day here.
Is Gerrion back?
No, that has been a total mess. If you're going to talk about bad trades for third round picks, that probably outpaces the Duke Johnson one. You know, they gave up Gerrion Conley, or they gave up a third round pick that they acquired in the Jadeveon Clowney trade for Gerrion Conley, a cornerback at the trade deadline. And that was kind of, O'Brien had this big idea of, like, it seemed like he was trying to find depressed assets of, you know, acquiring first round picks who the next team wants to give up on. That's why Vernon Hargraves is on this team too, though they picked him up off waivers. And, you know, Conley, they traded a third round pick for him, and he played pretty well during the back half of last season. Obviously not well enough that they picked up his fifth year option, but well enough that, you know, I thought he was at least a serviceable, solid, like average starter. And then in training camp, he was like, you know, practicing with the twos, and it was pretty odd. He had come off-season ankle surgery. He did not look good. And they started him on IR. And, you know, every time we asked for an update, he's not close. So, and they, cause like I said, they didn't pick up his fifth year option. This is his contract year. So it looks like he's not going to play at all this season. And they're going to have given up a third round pick for eight games of an average cornerback, which is,
well, I'm the master of salesmanship and transitions. And part of the reason I ask is he's a local kid. And he's a graduate of Massillon, who just a couple weeks ago, I wrote that story on the cult of Massillon football. And I encourage you, Aaron, and all of you guys listening to check it out. I encourage all of you guys to check out everything. I've already read one of Aaron's stories from this week, a lot of them from the past, getting ready. I've got another one posting this afternoon. It'll be up by the time you listen. So Sunday at 1 on Fox. Dick Stockton is on the call because Fox has an overload of 1 o'clock games because of the Masters, so it's going to feel more like Oilers-Browns than Texans-Browns. But enjoy it. The Browns haven't played in a while. Aaron Reese, thank you. All of you guys listening, thank you. Remember, subscribe and share Civilized Barking. Subscribe to The Athletic, and we will be back with another podcast after Sunday's game. It's a big one for the Browns as they try to get to 6-3. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Zach.